Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 8, titled The World Before. It's the mid-season finale. Aaron, what do you think of this? What do you think of the first eight episodes?
I think this season was strong so far, with like minor quibbles here and there. I thought this episode is a little messy, baby. I don't know how or why, but there was a lot of like just weird sequences and weird edits, and it felt a little rushed. Surely COVID didn't impact this half of the season. There's no way. This was like 18 months ago. So like,
yeah,
but it's like and I hate to do research on these episodes because there's so many spoilers since we're doing a retro coverage. But like, I kind of wanted to be like, what? Because there is just a lot of, I don't know, like stuff that didn't make a lot of sense. Things that I thought were not very well connected. Things that I thought were like shouldn't be allowed to happen that we'll talk about. Like for example, Gabriel walking in and killing Dante in the jail cell. I don't have a problem with Gabriel, the character, doing that. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with the Alexandria system of allowing him to be, because how many people have been murdered or died under mysterious circumstances in this prison have we already had?
We have no guards and at now this we've prison.
And now we've got like this apex, like deep undercover mole whisper guy, and we're just going to leave him unguarded. Like, it just, it's dumb, and it's a return to kind of lazy writing of previous seasons. But also, I'm trying to grade it on a little bit of a curve because like this episode did a lot of things, like introduced us to the relationship with Aaron and his daughter. That like,
yeah,
this would work a hell of a lot better if we had more of a connection to these characters, but they've been underserved and are trying to fix some of that stuff. There's a lot of good Carol and Daryl, I thought, here. There's a lot of stuff, but just everything felt kind of like oddly disjointed. What did you think?
I guess I didn't see as many problems this episode, but now that you're mentioning them, yeah, I definitely noticed like the Gabriel killing Dante stuff is like, what the fuck? You're really gonna let that happen? I liked the Daryl and Carol stuff quite a bit. It's like some of the most honest and those are questions I have too, right? Is this honest or is this Carol gaslighting Daryl, just saying what she wants, she knows he wants to hear, and going off and doing her own I'm going to murder Alpha thing anyway? Like, Carol's hard to read, like really hard to read at this point. And that was all interesting to me, right? Whether it's honest or not. That stuff was good. I liked, I guess, seeing the flashbacks of Dante and how he got into this group, how he got into Alexandria, you know, him being charged with the task of going in there in the first place. That stuff was cool. And Rosita's having, you know, a little bit of a crisis herself. She's out there clearing, essentially. Seems to be a favorite pastime in Alexandria is clearing.
I do say that, like, I was about to roll my eyes out of my skull, but like literally the next scene is her like, I can't do this. I'm a new mother. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh my God. Cause I was like, Jesus Christ, I can just blow off the notes of how many times I've said this before. Like, I think it's insane when you have like parents that take these insane risks, not directly involving their children, because like, you know, like I criticized Rick, I criticized a bunch of people. I'm like, Jesus Christ, we're going to go through this again. Oh no, actually Rosita has, you know, and again, it's not, it would be understandable if Rosita in a fit of rage and grief goes out there and gets herself killed. It's regrettable, unfortunate. But I do like my main characters that I follow on a show to like be identifiable and like to be relatable. And I just can't relate to people that are that like reckless and selfish about things when they got kids on the line, man. Like, it's a big problem for me.
Especially when the episode before you've been widowed, right? Well, yeah, I don't know what that's all about, but the kid runs the risk of being an orphan if you get yourself killed. And she points that out, and I'm like, yeah, that's right on. So I don't know.
So like I said, this is still not like a bad episode by any stretch of imagination. No. Just little weird things here and there where it felt like they ran out of time almost, or something at the end of the season, because it just like I said, it felt like it was, if you'd have told me that this was like, they were feverishly editing this together right as the CDC was coming in and saying, you got to get the fuck out of studio, coronavirus is coming, I'd be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But I don't think that's the case. So,
and the end of this episode is promising. You know, they go, Michonne goes off to an island where it's apparently a naval base, and there are a lot of weapons there, big weapons that could potentially fight a herd. Probably not any nukes. That's unfortunate, but
my nuke dream is getting further and further away, man.
I know. Probably helicopters. It makes me wonder, like, is this, you know, the base that Jadis is communicating with? Is this the place where Rick's being held? I don't know. I don't know what's in store in season 11.
Is he an A or a B?
I don't know. We'll find out, I guess.
He stole a boat that marks him as a B in my boat. My book. Boy, okay, having a hard time here. Shall we get into the episode?
Yeah, we can, but we should probably take a break first.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, we start off with a flashback to when Alpha sent Dante to be her eyes and ears within Alexandria. He joined up with some strangers that they let in and passed some info via dead drops and spread anti-whisper propaganda, tainted the water supply, all the things we've seen happening over the course of the last half season in Alexandria. Cut to him just after killing Sadiq. Rosita and the baby come looking for him and find Dante instead. Sadiq turns into a walker as Dante tries to kill Rosita, and she beats the shit out of him and then puts down Sadiq before he can eat the baby.
Boy, you know, again, The Walking Dead's at that stage where it's like, I kind of thought maybe Sadiq would eat that baby. I mean, you know, like, not graphically, not yeah. like a like he just tear into like a loaf of bread.
Why not? Why not?
It's AMC, man. They're not going to go. Even HBO is not hardcore enough to kill a baby on screen. Not even The Witch is hard. The best you're ever going to get is a silhouette of a baby getting sorted or some shit. You're going to get like a baby screaming and then blood splashing against a yeah. wall and then it stops screaming like that. You're never going to see like. You're a lot more aficionado. Have you ever seen a baby getting killed in like a, even like the pulpiest, hardest torture porn horror movie?
Right. That's what I was trying to think of. I'm sure it's been done. I can't think of it.
It seems like a taboo, and I'm all for keeping that taboo in place. And so I don't need to see a baby.
No, let's break some boundaries like here, AMC.
Fucking watermelon and a summer cookout. I just don't need to see that grisly affair.
I'm not with you on this. I want to see them break boundaries. I just watched Basic Instinct last night. We're covering it for a podcast here tomorrow. They were breaking boundaries, man. You're gonna show parts of the human anatomy that we've never seen on screen before. I want to see parts mm-hmm. of baby anatomy that we've never seen, not in the same way, but I want to see the insides of a baby. I want to see them coming out and spraying on the walls. Evil Dead would have done it if they got a fourth movie. Let's see it.
All right. You got to break the baby barbecue boundary, just like they broke the beaver boundary in
For sure.
Basic Instinct. So this is one of the prime examples of the disjointedness. Like, I thought with this reveal, we would understand. I don't have any idea how Dante got to the Whisperers. Like, here's a possible timeline. Lydia left the Whisperers. Mm-hmm. Or get rescued by them, whatever. The Whisperers go on their their winter sojourn. Dante is picked up in that time, like very early on. And then he sent the info, but he demonstrates his loyalty so much. He's able to infiltrate these people. He's able to pretend to be a doctor, which implies that he's a real doctor.
Well, the scenes,
because I don't think you can just fake being a doctor.
Yes, I agree. There must have been something in his history. Like, maybe his history is not a lie, right?
The combat yeah. medic stuff, yeah. But like, how? So the other alternates, but it beggars my imagination that someone as intelligent and capable enough as a doctor and would just like instantly turn his allegiance to this crazy monster lady. Mm. The second in is there's some kind of pre-existing relationship she's had with an extreme remove. Like does he live in the dark place or the deep place or whatever? And she's the only one allowed down there. And he's kept as like some, I don't know, torture baby project that she's melded in some kind of like completely loyal, almost slave. Like, I got a bunch of questions and I didn't get any answers. And now the guy's yeah. dead. And I'm like, this feels like the writers literally saying, don't ask too many questions about this because it's not going to make a lot of sense. Do you got any reads for me?
Or they just don't care to tell you much more than like, hey, he made it into the group. Because that's the only real information we get is that he was sent here to do a job and he, you know, got in by pretending to be a normal human being. And Alexander just let him in, which I think is interesting. You know, like it runs the risk of moralizing a little bit on a community wide level here. If we keep going back to the idea of like, we can't let people in. Well, we can't keep all people out. We got to let some people in. Okay, let's do it. And then Dante gets in and then we go, we can't let people in. Right. Like, are they going to keep flip flopping back and forth on whether or not to allow new community members?
So, but here's the thing. It's like, I do think it's kind of appropriate Morgulizing because it's like, you know, anytime you have a political policy, you know, it's like, hey, we want to lower taxes versus we want to raise taxes and give people a bunch of shit.
Sure.
Like, what happens if, like, your pet political theory just fails?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's like, well, there's a fatal flaw with it. Do you just keep doing it regardless, or do you swing wildly to the other direction? Or do you, like, okay, what is the way that we can, what's the middle position here? Yeah. And I think that, like, there's hints of this, like Michonne being like, whatever your new person policy, you need to rethink it. You need to get this, that, and the other done. Like, that seems wise. Like, mm-hmm. you need a little bit more screening. There needs to be a little bit more. There needs to be a process of, there needs to be an immigration process.
There is, though, right? Like, you Alexander know? Has that. They have entrance interviews, right? Where
That's
they sit
true.
Down
they
and videotape
guy,
them
and
rewatch them.
And Father Gabriel's like, and maybe the other thing is, you have to realize, is in a strong society, you have to trust that you're strong enough to survive yeah. one or two shitters that get in every once in a while, the outliers.
Sure.
But that's a tough one to sell to society. Like, hey, maybe a free society means every generation or so, a couple thousand, you're going to die because someone flies a plane into a building or someone poisons a water supply or someone does this. Like, are yeah. we comfortable with that? Are we do we want the freedoms? So I think that stuff is interesting. It's only Morgulizing if it becomes,
if it happens,
like,
over and over,
you know,
yeah.
and just wild swing back the other direction. While uh-huh. like, no, like, if it's a progressive, because that's part of, like, you know, the laws evolving. One of the reasons mm-hmm. we have, like, you know, Constitution's what, like, a couple pages, but the U.S. code of, like, is
thousands,
just like encyclopedias,
thousands,
yeah. rooms full of shit. Like, that's because there's 240 years of cruft, you know?
Yeah.
Old code, new code, changing times. So I don't know.
Like, that's what the trap I don't want them to fall into, which The Walking right. Dead has fallen into before. And granted, not under Angela Kang's watch, but I'm hoping yeah. they don't go that direction where it just keeps flip-flopping back and forth for the rest of the series.
But Dante is such a weird character. Like, it makes a lot of sense that he's like this guy that doesn't understand boundaries because he's a whisperer and he's kind of playing that up. And even now, like, he was, you know, trying to cloak his kooky behavior with, like these sexual come-ons to, you know, oh, I got a hot romance thing going, yeah. Sadiq. Ha ha ha. Well, what do you do? You know, until Sadiq's zombifies. I just wish we knew more, because, like, a lot of stuff, like, because I remember talking about when we saw the Silence of Whisperers all over town, like, Jesus, Alexander's lost the plot. Alexandria mm-hmm. has lost the plot. There's so many people fomenting. No, it's just one guy. I thought yeah. that was cool. I just need that. I needed, like, one thing to explain, because so many of these people don't I understand Lydia. Gamma kind of makes sense. Beta kind of makes sense. Alpha, but most of the people in the pack don't make a lot of sense to me. And Dante was a way for them to kind of get into that psychology and, like, how a person can do that. And I don't know. It feels like they're never going to answer those questions. And that's a little disappointing to me.
Then we move on to Aaron waiting on the bridge, and Gamma shows up and asks about her sister's baby, wants to see him. So she offers some information in trade, and Aaron has her take her mask off, and she says her name was Mary before all this.
Yeah. Anything interesting in the naming of Adam, you know?
As soon as they said Adam, and this always happens when someone says, oh yeah, the child's name is Adam, I was thinking, okay, what are they doing with this? Nothing? As best I can tell so far, I don't know. Is Adam the genesis of the new society that they want to create, the new perfect utopia?
It was the blacksmith family that adopted him, right?
I think so.
I don't know if that held true even after the blacksmith's wife got beheaded, but I don't know, because that could be like, hey, this is, you know, to me, I always think of Adam's as, like, its beginnings.
Yeah.
You know, but as also the other association, Adam is the fall from grace.
Sure.
So you can kind of go either side of that coin. I don't know. It's so, I guess this sets up the central mystery of the episode is Gamma loyal to Alpha? Was she giving this
right.
information in good faith? Was Alpha perhaps exploiting, knowing that Gamma, like, she kind of, like, this is like a dual purpose, because she yep. like seems to set up these win-win situations for herself. Like, you know, if my lieutenant does the thing, then I get a good win. And if they don't do the thing, then I get to lure my opponents into a trap.
Right.
And I think that's the, because clearly she led them into a trap. My only question is, and, but clearly also this is where the horde is.
Uh-huh.
At least that's what the episode implies. So it's like, was Gamma in on the Hornswoggle, or right. was
Did she know she was leading them into a trap? I had the exact same question. And I think it's like symbolically sort of interesting that Aaron has her take her mask off to say this, because he's thinking, you know, thematically, we've had a lot of stuff about masks and not hiding the truth and all these things. And Aaron thinks he can tell something just by looking at her face. Yeah. Can he? I don't know. I'm not sure about that. So then the council violently interrogates Dante in the infirmary. He tells them that the plan was to undermine their unity and watch their society crumble. Yeah.
So far.
Checks out.
So good. Yeah.
No, he says, no one's kind, actually kind. We're selfish. We're brutal. That's true of a lot of people. That's not true of everyone. I know some kind people.
And I was hoping, because like, I also think that if they gave this guy a public hearing, he'd sound like a lunatic. Like, to the extent that like this guy is an extremist ideologue, which I think you can, a brainwashed, delusional cannibal cult is definitely qualifies. These people act like, oh, if only the silent majority would just rise up and say that, like, what we've all been thinking. But anytime they're given a big enough microphone, like, people are like, oh, what the fuck are you talking about? No, get the fuck off the stage.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like, yeah, like if you go into Alexander and he's like, here's the pitch. We just walk with zombies. Uh-huh. Fuck your breads. Fuck your jams. Fuck your children. And all that kind of like, don't worry about a future. Just this is the world now. Like, no, they throw shit at him and boo.
Right.
And resolve to fight harder. Like,
no, Gabriel,
these are not dangerous ideas. You shit, you dumbass. Right.
Take him up on stage. Get the extra zombie skins that they found washed up in Oceanside. And just start handing them out. All right, here we go now. This is what you guys want to do, right? All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely harder conspiracies to debunk, you know, but like, hey, we should all go and be zombies in the field. Nah, that's an easy one. I don't have to think. I got some empirical evidence on that in my last few years in this apocalypse. No sale. Right.
That's the fundamental problem with the Whisperers, is that their idea of normal is just so far afield from anyone else's.
And that's the things like, and Gabriel in killing is almost like he needed to be silenced. or maybe it's just a fit of rage. I guess I could buy that too. But like, it's another one where it's like, well, what am I supposed to think about this? Also, I thought everyone's emotional reaction to the idea that Sadiq just turned into a zombie and died, and this guy has been infiltrating, like Michonne's is the only one that felt real, because she's at a remove. You know, she's at another Oceanside. She wasn't ever particularly close to Dante, I don't think. She wasn't sleeping with him. She didn't have a baby with him. She wasn't, all that kind of stuff. She's just angry that, like, oh my God, I got fooled.
Mm-hmm.
But like Gabriel and Rosita and like Daryl, and like, it's this weird, like, that they had no idea what to do with the emotional reaction, you know, like. I don't know. Maybe Rosita's tough enough that she's just suppressing like what she's probably feeling. But I just thought that all these scenes, like the director had no idea what kind of emotion these people, other than just anger and outrage, they should be feeling.
Sure. And that's definitely the most immediate emotions you would probably feel.
Probably. Yeah. But scenario. That's just some traumatic shit, you know, having to let down the baby and put it in a bathtub, and the dad almost eats it and you have to kill him. That, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to happen to her in that little stretch. Yeah,
that's rough. So Aaron returns with information about where Alpha's keeping the herd. It's a sunken field on the edge of the National Forest. I didn't consult a map or anything. I don't know where this places us, but Daryl doesn't want to do anything stupid. But Aaron thinks he thinks Gamma's telling him the truth. And so Daryl sends Aaron to get a group from Hilltop to go out there with him. And afterward, Daryl questions Carol about what happened with Lydia, and he's real suspicious of her, and she takes some offense to that.
So this is a pretty good scene. One of the things we've been talking about is, like, how much is Aaron being honest with everybody? Like, is he doing this Gamma thing as a clandestine type of operation? Apparently, no. He reports this to the council. Or is this like a shadow council? Because like Father Gabriel,
they used to meet in the open in the fucking barnyard or whatever. They don't do that anymore. They meet in the shadows inside somebody's living room, right?
Because I think you're supposed to understand this is kind of like a not a, this is not the elected governing body of Alexandria. These are just like the people. And I think that's kind of interesting that they're playing to this tension, like the people who imagine like if George Washington had gone off into retirement and like 2 years later, like, I'm pulling some strings from my shadow cabinet. And like, and this is what this feels like. This feels like the longtime survivors. Like Aaron, like they mentioned, he's founding member of Alexandria, thinks maybe it's lost its way. Carol, that's like her whole deal. Daryl is sympathetic to it. I wonder if this is something that they're kind of running themselves. And then like, well, if we get something, maybe we'll bring it to the council, whatever. Clearly they get to that. But like, the politics of the situation was weird to me. So Shadow Counselor, no, I thought this was a really good scene between like Daryl and Carol. You know, him because she's got some legitimate points like, hey, I let Lydia go because she didn't want to be with us anymore. And, you know, he's like, well, that's the only thing keeping us safe. And she's like, well, what is she, our human shield? And we can use her to push on their wounds, too. Like, they're not the only ones that, you know, we're not the only ones dealing with internal strife and fractions, because you got this just got a monster lady leading people out in natural zombieism. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of internal contradictions in that philosophy we can hit at. And, you know, she's like, she doesn't want to be found. And she's like, were you talking about her or you? I thought it's pretty good stuff. And again, it's all about Carol taking unilateral action.
Yeah.
Feeling like she doesn't. And like Daryl later correctly diagnoses, like, you don't care about yourself. You don't care about, she doesn't care about anyone. She's narrow mindedly fixated on this. And it's frightening.
Yeah. And that attitude is spreading. I don't know. Gabriel does the same this episode. It's that can truly undermine a community. If you have a bunch of people not acting as a community,
everyone's just going rogue, man. Yeah. It sucks.
That's exactly, honestly, what Alpha wants. That's why she sent Dante in there. He's still serving a purpose, even in death. So, like, I don't know. We'll see how this goes for him.
But I do hope that the other group, like, I think Carol's onto something. Like, launching psyops against them is, like, the way to go. Like, imagine if, like, you just, like, pack picnic baskets and you put it in strategic areas where the Whispers are going to find
it. Jams, like, and breads and
just,
jelly.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, strawberry jams and fresh bread, some summer sausage, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's, like, it's you know, a soft blanket, a fleece sweater.
Yeah.
You know, some soap.
Yep.
Like,
there's
it's kind of a comic book, you know, or is anything that like the proving, like, or just start playing music, get the gramophone out there on the border and start playing concerts and stuff. Like, get them with the creature comforts, hit them with the things that they don't have and you do have. Like, I hope that they do that.
Just start leaving babies, clearly Alpha, all over the woods for them to find.
Babies in baskets. Look, yeah. We got babies. You want to play some babies? Yeah, sure. Why not? I just feel like there's a lot that this whole, they've got wounds we can push onto. That's very true. And I hope that we see some of that exploitation next year. Next season.
On the road to Oceanside, Michonne and company come across some tracks in the road, which is a possible scout. She says they have to be as quiet as possible. And Professor Luke immediately starts up a conversation with Judith about music in the library. So much for quiet.
Judith needs a full drum set to practice in. Yeah,
right.
In Alexandria.
And so they decide to make a detour to pick up some new books.
Yeah.
Because apparently all the books have been read.
No one sacked all the local libraries. It feels like this should be like maybe not top priority because you got to get food and supplies. But like, they've been here 7 years. Why are there any shelves left?
Yeah.
Like, the blacksmith needs shit to make. Well, guess where they find that information? Books. You don't have to steal a Constantinoga wagon from the Smithsonian. You can just like find the designs in books, man. Like, it kind of staggered me that like no one has apparently touched this thing for the wealth of information that it has. Like, they're just letting it rot into the ground. I don't know. Seems crazy to me.
Yeah. Especially when dude made a trip from an island miles away, just to hit up a library. Yeah.
Was that his goal? Did he say that out?
Seemed like it. I don't think he's bringing books back for his daughter. Or at least a book.
Yeah. That was like what some of what he was doing. But like, good Lord, he's got to have a bigger plan than that.
Yeah, I think he said supplies.
Supplies.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So they go to the library and everyone immediately splits up. Michonne gets word from Alexandria about Sadiq. And Luke mm-hmm. abandons all caution when he finds some sheet music and almost gets eaten by several walkers. But he's saved by some random dude who promptly runs off after leaving his stuff there. And then Michonne tells mm-hmm. Luke that Sadiq died.
Yeah, I also like, how's Luke get in this situation? He walks past, there's a zombie in both aisles. Mm-hmm. He had to walk past one of them. One of them hits him high, one of them hits him low. Like, what? Come on, Luke. This is, how did you survive 7 years into this apocalypse?
Yeah, I finally saw the weapon that he's rocking with these bike gears or whatever they are attached to this bat.
Piece of shit. Yeah. Yep.
That thing would fall apart immediately, but it looks awesome.
It's impractical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he escaped by this random guy. Like, there's no mystery. This is all going to be laid bare by the end of the episode. But I also love the professor. Like, this guy just ran in and saved my life. Like, who in the hell does that? He's just like, he's so Jack Black. It's pretty great.
There's one other thing that's a little weird in this scene, because they cut when Michonne tells Luke that Sadiq's dead, they cut to Judith, who gives like this look of surprise or something.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why she's surprised by this, because she was standing right next to Michonne when word came over the walkie about Sadiq's death. So she's having a delayed reaction. What is this?
I didn't let it go in a scene before, but there's another one where, like, when the professor and her were talking about going to the library and getting books, like, or not even before that, like before they even suggested going to the library and getting books, like, she was making stink faces at the very idea of like Judith getting into music or something. I'm like, what? I don't understand this. Yeah, I don't understand the reaction here. And I noticed that about Judith too. It's like I feel like the director, maybe is this a Nicotero joint? I'm going to have to look it up.
Yeah.
Whoever directed this, he or she has a very loose connection to the emotional core of this material. And a lot of like, he's like action. The actor's like, what are we supposed to do? I don't know.
You guys read the script, right?
Yeah. 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 Don't read the script. Let the script read you.
I don't know what that means. Action.
Yeah.
The director is John Dahl. I don't know if he has done anything. Oh, he directed Rounders. I like Rounders.
Huh. All right.
Red Rock West, which is a Nick Cage film. I don't know. Sounds like he does some stuff. Billions. So
he's done some stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, Gabriel delivers the eulogy at Sadiq's funeral, and afterward, Carol talks with Ezekiel about Sadiq. And he asks if they need help with Alpha's herd. She, you know, doesn't really, but she asks if everyone's okay. And he wishes her luck. Doesn't respond to that at all, because he is not okay. His only hope, the guy who was touting acupuncture and herbal teas for his gigantic growth and cancer, dead now. So there goes that.
Yeah, I like this though, because both of them can tell there's something they're not talking about, and both of them kind of feel in like the person should trust them, but neither of them are entitled to the information. It's a nice subtle performance, and I like the chemistry between these two. I wish they could just be happy, you know?
Yeah, I wonder what Ezekiel's gonna do, man. He had very little hope even when Sadiq was alive, and now,
yeah,
where's his hope coming from? Michonne?
Yeah, I don't know. Because that's the thing, is like, I very clearly got the idea that King Ezekiel had a glimmer of hope that maybe Sadiq could help him.
Yeah.
And I still think there's got to be something to that Russian satellite. I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid. Maybe the satellite just brought a bunch of zombies, caused a fire, and let Eugene hellify his radio set work.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. King Ezekiel could die. but I just was hoping they'd find a way to save him. And they keep on having this breadcrumb too. Like, you know, King Ezekiel's thoughtful. Like, I just thought, you know, I feel like they're still wanting me to believe that it's possible. And it would also be a big shot of hope in this show's arm if they could do that. Like, I remember talking about that would be like a huge, like, moon landing moment. Like, humanity. Did you hear over in Alexandria they fucking cured cancer? Holy shit. Holy yeah. shit. Not even a decade past the fall and we're already curing cancer again.
Right. Like, really strong cool. oolong is all it takes. The finest Georgia tea.
They got fresh bread, they got jams, and they're curing cancer.
Yeah.
Alexandria, really moving the ball ahead.
It does raise questions. Like, now, it's real unfortunate when one of your doctors kills the other doctor and then you have to kill that doctor. When those yeah. are your only two doctors in your community, I don't know where Alexandria mm-hmm. goes as far as healthcare from here.
But on the other hand, you can't have like an evil doctor. Like,
I'm not saying they did anything wrong. It just fucking sucks. The situation
you're
is
you're not
bad.
Gonna have Dr. Doom showing up in a lab coat and being like, you know, no. I would death the rich, you know, to what is it? What is the Fantastic Four? Mr. Yeah, death to Mr. Fantastic. Okay, so I understand you have pain and swelling in your throat. You know, like, here's the tongue depressor. Like, you can't. No, it's, no. He's done. His utility as a doctor is over.
For sure. What do they do, though? Well, they got no doctors. They don't even have any trainees.
They got no
as
doctors.
Best I
they don't
tell.
Even have any trainees because of Sadiq's PTSD about the last trainee he had. No, that's a huge problem. It is a very huge problem.
I wonder if the show is actually going to deal with that. They've got to, right?
I mean, doctors are a relatively new thing, though. I mean, you've always had physicians, but like before the last 200 years, they kind of like smeared honey and pepper on you and kind of hope for the best, crush some herb. And like, you can do that. That information is contained in libraries, for example. You can start getting shamans and medicine men and women. And
but yeah, I think doctors have proved their value, proved their worth sure. over the last few hundred years.
Yeah, I'm not saying I want to go back, but they got no choice. There's no doctors unless the Whisperer's got a couple more waiting in the wings they can convert.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. Let's take a quick break and we'll get on with the recap.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, Rosita goes outside the gates to do a little clearing. Just clear her mind a little. She almost gets bitten until Eugene happens upon her and helps her out. And he says, "Oh, I'm sorry about Sadiq," in like the most awkward way possible. He's got no idea how to deal with the Rosita situation.
I don't think Rosita knows how to deal with the Eugene situation.
Both.
I don't. Honestly, I wish they'd left a scene last week out where her and Sadiq were cuddling and she's like, "Oh, Eugene's so gross, but you know, I kind of needed me a piece of him." Like, yep. God, fuck. That was a terrible
scene.
Calling
him on the radio. "I miss you. I just want to hear your voice." What?
Yeah, man. Like, this is like, that's literally the bad side of the friend zone that like, I don't know, man. Because she's definitely looking at like she's seen him in a whole new light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the alpha daddy has been slain. Maybe it's time for the beta daddy. This is all just deeply stupid and dumb, and it makes me like Rosita less.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
We'll see how it goes.
I hope Eugene makes it with the ham lady.
Ham lady? Oh, the radio lady. Yeah, radio lady.
Yeah, radio lady.
Oof, that's a mouthful. I don't know. Radio lady, in my opinion, is just another one of Alpha's people luring them in. Like,
yeah, you're
right.
Yeah. I think we talked about how pathetically easy it'd be to catfish this desperate guy.
Oh yeah.
But no, I don't like any part of this plot with him. Like they've gotten to such a good place like three episodes ago, mm-hmm. and they've just been taking these two characters through the mud. I don't like it.
You know what I do like in this scene, and they haven't done it since the prison arc, when they were clearing the prison, this helmet removal where it rips all the skin off with it, because I guess it was like melted, fused to the head of this walker.
I do have questions about the stories of these guys, because these look like pre-fall electrical linemen that got into some kind of high voltage deal that fused one of their helmets to their skull. But those would be very old zombies.
Yeah,
you know, unless there's some place has got power like 100 miles, maybe Georgie's got power restored in Pittsburgh and they're all just chilling out there making fun of Alexandria.
How many linemen
they got fresh bread
exist in Georgia or in the world or certainly this country? Because like we've already seen linemen zombies, right? Back when the orange backpack
was a thing. Yeah. There was a whole plot where like Daryl, they're all tied up and downed electrical lines or some shit like that. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Where are all the fast food worker zombies? Like, I want to see. Come on. Do we have to retread linesmen? That's weird.
I want to see McDonald's fryman zombie with like a basket on its head. It's all melted with French fries stuck to it. Sure. Yeah. Like as in his throes of becoming a zombie, he turned the fry machine over on himself.
Hell yeah.
We definitely need that.
I'd like to see it. But that was really cool. And it reminded me of the gas mask removal in the prison sequence years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely Nicotero flexing.
Yeah. All right. Gabriel watches the recording of Dante's community induction interview. Rosita comes in all bloody and tells Gabriel she's concerned that if she dies now that Sadiq is dead, her baby will be an orphan. Gabriel's too busy with the community to give her any guidance other than the feeling will pass. He's pretty hostile here.
It's a frustrating scene because like this is bad boyfriend behavior from Gabriel, but like also this is a wartime situation. You know, if like you're shooting people in a foxhole and like you elbow your buddy or your girlfriend for that matter, and like they want to have a timeout and be like, "You just fucking disrespected my personal space," or shit like that. It's like, Christ, time and place. And like, I don't know, like they're like, I don't know why the writers hate Rosita now, but I just feel like this is the wrong place and time to talk about the communication problems in a relationship. I don't know. Is there? And the other thing is like, I guess on the other side is like when people have these important critical jobs that get in the way of friends and family, it does degrade the relationship. So maybe that's just a story they're telling. But I don't know. Rosita is kind of a woman of action and a badass. Maybe that's what she is. She's wanting to talk about the fact that now she hesitates because she for the first time has got something to live for. That's all interesting to explore, but it's just annoying to like, you know, Gabriel's trying to pour through this stuff and figure out what they missed. And
you know, if there could be anybody more that's infiltrated them. And she's just like, you know, hey, I'm having some issues here. It just seems designed to get the audience, certain segments of the audience, especially, to just hate this woman. And I think they're doing her dirty.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move on to Aaron playing the capital game with his daughter. What use is this fucking, we're going to memorize capitals of an old dead world? Like, what is the capital of Atlantis, child? Because that's important somehow. Like, the capitals
won't be
the same.
What's the capital of Gondor in Middle Earth? Yeah.
You're going to establish Alexandria will be the new capital of whatever artificial state boundaries you create later on, right?
This scene is kind of throwaway, but they needed it because, like, they keep on referring to Aaron and his daughter. A bunch of time has passed. Like, they need to start building these connections and making these people real characters. Sure. We know ever since, like, Eric died, like, Aaron really hasn't had much to do.
Teach her to make pasta. So, like, giving capitals is bullshit.
But I think giving him this, like, this, he's like this big wanderer. You know, he like went from place to place, was always traveling. Mm-hmm. You know, this is kind of an interesting, and, you know, the whole, like, he drills the stuff into her, and then she says, "Tell me a story from blah blah blah." And then there's this bullshit story about him and his lover finding a Native American village from hundreds of years ago that's still intact, and
he
sounds
has
like
no
they're
idea
just
what
fucking
those people,
fucking just destroying a archaeological site with his with his boyfriend here. But, like, there is something interesting about these people that have been replaced. It is funny also, like, come on, Aaron. What did happen to these people? Come on. Come on. I think your daughter can take the truth. Like, there isn't even an America anymore. Let's just be honest. Like, who knows what happened to them? They must have just gotten tired of living on the land and wandered off, right?
Sure.
Is the
show trying to use this as, like, the point of this is our future is uncertain? Because that's the vibe I got from it. Like, we've built this thing, but we don't even know. We didn't know when we started it what it would be today. Yeah. It's something very different than what we expected. But also in the future, we have no idea what it's going to become.
Plus, like, if you go back, like, Alexandria used to be this kind of utopian place, right? And that's the original way, like, the original people there wanted to live it. And then these other people came in and brought a bunch of conflict and grief and, like, first of all, I think the comparisons border on, like, I don't know. You got to tread carefully when you're trying to make these analogies and stuff. But, like, it is kind of, I don't know. Aaron feels like he's out of place, and he is for the first time confused about, like, how we should do things and what does it mean to be, like, you know, like, I guess I'm fine with Aaron doing a bit of moralizing. Mm-hmm. Trying to decide, you know, like, what is the thing he wants to be and do, and how do you keep society safe? And you got a daughter now that you got to worry about, like, and we need to meet this girl at some point. So, but another, it felt a little shoehorned in, right? Like, just out of nothing, this scene here.
Yeah, especially for something like a mid-season finale, whatever that means. You want something more cohesive, I think, to excite people about the next half season over the break.
Yeah.
Anyway, Michonne warns Oceanside's leaders that they have to start vetting people more intensely. Now that she learned about Dante, the guy who saved Luke is dragged into Oceanside, and Luke tries to defend the guy, but Michonne's paranoid that he could be a Whisperer. And then a whole bunch of walkers show up just then, and Michonne loses track of Judith.
Yep. More good slow-mo zombie slaughtering scenes. They made another interesting point where Michonne, and I didn't realize this until at the time, but she makes the point is, like, we can no longer use the fire as a marker for Alpha's return, which is the show letting it, because I've been doing the same thing. Like, well, they must have been, you know, returned for the spring. But, like, they're really calling into question that the idea that they knew about the transgress in the winter. Is that because they saw the evidence of the zombies being slaughtered, or is it because they actually had a couple watchers there? They're kind of like flipping the table over, and we, along with the show, is realizing how much the communities have maybe underestimated Alpha and what she's capable of, how sophisticated she's capable of being.
For good reason. You know, they don't have a lot of technology.
Sure.
Or I guess they have a lot of culture. It's just a weird culture.
Right. And, like, you know, it's easy when you're analyzing your enemies to see their weaknesses, it's often very hard to gauge their strengths, to like give them a really appropriate and sober analysis of like, okay, what can they do that we can't? What can we do that they can't? That's, you know, it's deviled a lot of military leaders and civilian leaderships over the centuries. It's cool to see Alexander struggle with that same thing.
I'm looking forward to seeing how they intend to vet people more closely, because like I said, I think they did a fair job of it. And I don't know what vetting means. Like, somebody walks up, they have a story. Do you torture them until they break and then kick them out? Like, what are you talking
about?
Maybe
there's a probationary period. Like, you know, like you have to, once you clear, you've got like a year where you live in a dedicated, but then, you know, like there's a dedicated place that's maybe higher security. Mm-hmm. Where you are always, you do work for the community, but you're kind of like in a Negan, kind of like Negan, except for not as prisony. It's more of like, you know, a compound within the thing, but that lead, you know, like that starts to sound like a ghetto, you know, like you got the original born Alexandrians, like casting aspersions towards the people that were kept behind the fences. And, but like, I don't know, something like that, like a green card, where it's like you go through and you've been vetted, but we're not sure if we're going to give you citizenship yet. So go out there and earn. And but
it's hard to defend against what happened with Dante. It's really almost impossible because he has an extremely valuable skill that they needed to put into work for their community. Do you just not let those people do the things that they need to do, especially now that you have zero doctors? What if a doctor roams in and says, hey, I'm a doctor, I can help you. Right. You say, no, you go sit over there in the corner while we have zero doctors. Don't you dare touch any of our oolong tea. Is that can't be the plan, you know? I mean, you keep them under guard, I guess, while they do their job, but.
Right. But eventually you have to trust people and you got to like, because I think Dante is a bit of an outlier, because it's very hard to imagine a person that's in that committed of a, you know, weird ideology, maintaining that kind of purity. But we've heard it all the time. Like, you know, like the guys that came over in the 9/11 hijackings, right. Like they had these strict religious beliefs, but over in America, you know, they were, you know, kind of living it up, and they're highly educated from a Western perspective the whole time. And this is, you know, the whole time engaging the civilization, but also we're going to fuck this place up. We're going to burn it all down.
Yeah.
That happens sometimes. And it can happen to people that are very, again, highly educated, wealthy, with, it's not like, you know, poor, desperate people being pushed into situations necessary all the time. So it'll be interesting to think that they explore that. It just sucks that Dante's dead and they really can't, other than flashback.
Yeah. Gabriel goes to talk to Dante in prison, but it turns into a whole lot more than that. When Gabriel pulls out a knife and stabs him about 100 times, holy shit, he goes ham on this guy, man. Like, I just watched Basic Instinct. I think he was recreating a scene of that.
Just carving this dude's liver, huh?
Yeah.
So it's weird because, like, the whole, everything Gabriel was saying about second chances was leading me to believe that he was going to do the Gabriel thing, where, like, this guy, we're gonna kill this guy with kindness and
turn the other cheek,
rehabilitate him or whatever. But he was talking about second chances to prove himself a man to Rosita. Because that's how the rest of the episode plays out, that she sees and approves of this behavior. And look, I don't think that this is necessarily out of character for Gabriel. Like, he's been pushed and this is a major transgression. You know, killing your adoptive baby's father, that's very important to your girlfriend, and he's, you know, he's like a brother to you already, and then you got this other bond. It's like you know, Lenny Kravitz, Jason Momoa kind of thing. But yeah, there's a lot of people in the audience get that one.
I mean, he's married to his daughter, right? Is that the thing?
No, I think Lisa isn't, like, yeah, Lenny Kravitz was Lisa Bonet's ex, and
okay.
Right. Now Jason Momoa has moved in there, but they're best bros, all apparently. Right.
We got to get a third in the mix, because, so like, boy, who's the UG in this situation? It's neither of them. They're both way too sexy for that.
They don't have a Eugene. They don't have the quadrangle. They just have the triangle. Oh, okay. But I get that you like Gabriel, especially since he thinks he's not a big tough guy, like, you know, he has to do something like this. My only problem is, and I get he's also senior council member, so maybe he would have the power to like dismiss guards, but they should have shown that.
Yeah.
The idea that you can just walk into this place without any guard, especially after all the ridiculous shit that's gone on in the jail system of Alexander and Hilltop of late, just is stupid. It's really dumb. It's as dumb as having all those sick people crammed together in mass quarantine, you know, quarantine things. It's just a zombie buffet. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. I thought we were beyond this, and I want them to get better in this regard, because this, if you want to do the scene, you can do it. You just have to set it up to where it's not stupid.
And if there was a guard, he didn't just like say, okay, we need privacy here. He sent them home for like the day, because later on you see Rosita looking at the outside of that building and Gabriel just strolls out. Nobody's there.
Nobody. Yeah. Like, yeah, and there should be guards. Like, you can't do, you know, like try, like he locks them in. Like I said, there's ways you could stage that, but then I don't know. Like, the show doesn't want you to think about whether Gabriel did something that's good or bad, or like what the other Alexanders will think about it. It's just, you know, he did the thing. And I imagine it'd be popular. A lot of Alexandrians would cheer him on. It's just, I wish the show sweated those details a bit.
So the guy who saved Luke was getting away until Judith cut his legs out from under him, literally. And she calls Michonne over and she says, good girl.
Yeah, like I mean, I know she's got like the little girl blade, but I feel like that guy's leg would just be gone.
Yeah.
Like there's this like little nick on it. Like, and I'm like, well, does she have like a bamboo practice sword? No, it's a full on. It's just the small version of the katana, the backup version of it. Yeah, I feel like that guy's just lost his foot, man. Gone.
Yeah, it's just
have to build him an Aaron foot.
Right. Oh, well, I want to see the attachments for that.
Maybe she used the back of the blade. Maybe she swung with the back, the not sharp side of the katana.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure.
So it's just, you just got to like just running in as hard as you can into like a coffee table with your shin. That'd take you down.
Oh, yeah.
Probably and bloody it. Yeah, that's what she did. She's the dull side.
Sure. Canon.
We'll give that to the show. Boom.
Then Rosita talks to Coco, the baby, as she sees Gabriel coming out of the prison house. Like we talked about a second ago.
Blessing her baby with strength and growing tall and having family. I thought that was good. And then, like I said, everything with Rosita and her internal state is kind of off the rails for me. And I guess I'm going to add Gabriel to that list now, too.
And then the Hilltop and Alexandria groups meet up on a trail. And they walk into the night, crossing the border to find the place where Gamma said the herd would be. Daryl stops Carol from stepping into a bear trap and tells her that she has to figure out how to talk to him. And they hug, and Daryl tells her not to let Alpha take the future that they have, and then they continue on into the woods. Is this a real moment?
I think it's a real moment, because, like, Carol has got this upset. I think the real moment is when he says, you've got to tell me, and she goes, I don't know how. Mm-hmm. And I think that's real. I don't think she can articulate everything that's going on and that, or thinks it's going to make sense or whatnot. So yeah, it felt like I said, it's real, and that she's grappling with something and she's dealing with a bunch of demons and she's on trucker speed and she's seeing her family. Like there's like a lot of stuff going on here, but like, I love the scene though. Like Daryl's like, you know, you never got off the boat. It's like talking to a damn ghost, which calls back to the ghost episode. I thought it was really good. It's like some of the strongest material, and it always goes back to like two oldest members of the cast,
right?
Longest term relationship that's been like, you know, these are fairly popular characters. It's been well watered. There's a lot of history there, and it just works, man.
For sure,
it works.
Yeah, I will say, with Carol, like trust is easy to lose and hard to build. And she has lost some of my trust, you know, when she's going after Alpha like this unilaterally. And I don't know that I'm ready to just say, OK, I trust Carol again, which is why
it might just be busted, because, yeah, there's no guarantee that, you know, Daryl can give the speech where it's like, you know, you got to try. She's not worth it. She's a dead woman. You have a future. Don't let her feel like you can say all those things. But, you know. If you got an addiction issue, or you've got like you got an Ahab deal where you're addicted to you got a vengeance, a vendetta against your white whale, in this case Alpha. No aspersions to Samantha Morton, but it's an obsession. It's an obsession.
Yeah, it's a Sophia obsession with her, right? Like this.
Yeah, her vulnerability about keeping people safe and her inability to do that. No matter how tough and capable she gets, she still can't keep everyone safe. It's a really nice, it's a really great character arc that they put her on. Mm-hmm. And it's very distinct from the Morgulizing we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
She's almost one of the few characters that have had sustained Morgulizing, but it all kind of makes sense and is true to character and progresses in some way.
Mm-hmm. So Gabriel and Rosita watch Dante's body burn, I think is what's happening here, which I have questions. Like, how did, you know, okay, maybe you can go into the jail and you can murder the prisoner without any guards noticing, but how do you get a body outside of the gates?
Dude, I don't know, man. This is another one. It's like, this is flagrant. There should be a whole bunch of council members rolling up. Like, what have you done? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, what is this body we're burning in the, like, but no, there's no one.
No, it's crazy. But the show keeps rolling, so let's go. The guy who saved Luke wakes up and with his hands bound and tells Judith that the book she's reading is for his daughter and shouldn't be reading it. Michonne sends Judith away and tries to get some info out of this guy. The guy says a lot of stuff about Mercy, which makes Michonne think of both Rick and Sadiq and start to trust him a little bit. She asks where his home is, and he claims that it's on Bloodsworth Island, which is a naval base, I guess.
It's a real island. I did look into it, and I guess it was used for like artillery practice for the Navy, but I don't think there's an installation on it. But, you know, it's the Walking Dead universe, so maybe there's a super, super deeper secret installation.
Could be. But she tells him that he owes Oceanside for the damage he caused, and he offers to help fight their enemies.
Yeah. Give him these... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, this stuff with Mercy is really good. It's calling back not just to the recent loss of Sadiq, because he was kind of the first person to bring that sentiment into the community.
That's his mother saying, I think.
Yeah, but then it also harkens back to Rick, right? And that wound is no longer fresh, but it's still there. And that's something that Rick used to say all the time. And so, you know, with the recent death of Sadiq, it's like, oh, shit, this really hits home for her.
No, they did it. I thought that was a really good job of calling all that back and making a through line and making, you know, drawing the connection to Michonne's, like, you know, reaction to Sadiq. Like, they did a great job of Michonne's emotional reaction to all this stuff. And how, like, some of the stuff is just kind of a leap of faith, you know? It's weird that this guy, like, was he going to, like, throttle Judith for reading his daughter's book? Because he lunges at her like full, but he also saved Luke, and
he might just be grabbing it back. I don't know.
He's a little grabby.
Yeah. Grab the book.
But yeah, I like that. I thought that was a great, great way to connect to show's history.
Yeah. And then afterward, Michonne tells Judith that the guy lives on a naval base, has weapons big enough to fight a herd, and also, she has to go with him alone to this island, and Judith understands, knowing that it could end the war.
Mm-hmm. I continue to like Judith. She's old soul, capable, but still, you know, I don't think unbelievably so. And like the fact that she's putting on a brave face because she knows her mom's got to do something dangerous. It's cool. I like it.
Yeah.
I like Judith.
Then we go back to the woods where the scouting party arrives at the location that Alpha or Gamma gave them, but there's no herd. Daryl's pissed off, but Aaron is still not sure that Gamma lied to them. And I have questions about that too. Like, did she know she was lying? You know, there's That's a herd the thing, there. Yeah. Did she really actually lie?
Exactly. Yeah. Cause I thought, like, oh, well, she got snookered, but, and the Carol's got this thoughtful look on her face, which that's the thing. It's like, I don't understand. What, like, Carol's almost got like the spider sense for Alpha, which is weird. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, it's again, it's the telltale heart, it's Moby Dick, all this stuff.
Yeah. And then we go back to Oceanside, where Michonne tells this dude Virgil, who you know, is the guy who saved Luke, that she's taking him home in exchange for all the weapons on his island, which seems like a bad trade. Seems like a real bad trade. But I mean, what's the guy going to do? She gives back his stuff and then says goodbye to Luke, Judith, and the others. And she gives Judith a walkie to keep in touch. They load into the wagon and leave, and Michonne sails out to the island with Virgil.
Fuck yeah. Get some sailing on The Walking Dead. Although, I gotta say, I was a little disappointed. It feels like they had a drone and like half a day to shoot this thing.
Uh-huh.
Because the actual sailing scenes were essentially, I don't know, it felt very mid-budget sailing blog from 2016. I was like, I was so excited, like, oh my god, we're going to get some sailing, some island hopping, and what? And then no.
I think
the problem is Danai Gurira can't sail, and neither can this guy.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get too close or too clear, or you'd see, and this boat's too small to like hide someone that's behind a tiller or whatever. So like, yeah, it's wide shots, speed it up, make it look slick. Just this is just the equivalent of Indiana Jones, the red line that's flying over the map. Like, it just, yeah, hey, we're going places.
I like the tech they're using, though. It's bigger budget than a lot of TV stuff does, or it feels bigger budget, right? Those drone shots feel like helicopter shots, feel like feature films.
I've just seen them executed better.
Sure.
This felt like a drone shot, like a rather drone than shot, like a yeah. very, yeah, like the best drone shots feel like epic helicopter tracking shots, and these feel like, yeah, this was shot on $1,000 drone.
Yeah, I mean, drones are definitely way cheaper than shooting in helicopters nowadays. So,
yeah,
it probably was cheaper, but it felt to me bigger than a TV show.
Okay.
Or bigger than the stuff The Walking Dead usually does. So,
I mean, yes, it's not the same goddamn stretch of woods that we're just forever and ever. The 100 acres that we're just stuck on. Yeah, it's different. Even getting out of Oceanside with their, you know, fish rack drying and like their beach scenes. Like, yeah, it's nice to get a little variety for sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It's been a long time since we played this game, but do you remember the Walking Dead Telltale Michonne game where she starts off on a boat with a bunch of people?
Yeah.
Is that guy's name not Virgil? Is this not the same character from that boat? Because he looks
a lot like him. Is his name Virgil?
I was trying to look that up like while you were talking here, and I can't find him being in the game, but God, I thought he was.
Cause you could be right about
this.
Does
Chad know? Chad might
know. His name's Virgil. The thing is, like, man, I'm unwilling to do anything but IMDb search for this because it might be a giant ass spoiler.
Right. I got to his wiki article and I just skipped over season 10.
But I thought all the stuff that happens on The Walking Dead happens before she meets with Rick's group, the Walking Dead Telltale game.
I don't think it's literally that same character.
Oh,
I think they're just doing like
them,
an homage to the game.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that for sure.
I could be wrong about that, but that's where my brain went. Okay. So on the way back from the place where the herd was not, Carol sees Alpha across clearing and chases after her, and the group follows. Alpha ducks into some kind of cave, and inside, the entire group falls into a pit surrounded by walkers.
Well, that's it for this group. They're dead.
Yep.
There's no way they're
They're going to climb out, right? Or are they going to spend a whole episode? Definitely they'll spend an episode in there like Rick and Daryl did in that pit.
Is Alpha hallucination? Because that's the only possibility to make sense them walking out is if Alpha was a hallucination on of Carol's. Which they've played with before, because if Alpha's there and that's a trap and she set him, there's no way they get out of that cave alive.
Unless she wants them alive, but I don't know why she would.
But then it's like, okay, so that's the other thing. It's like, why would you do that? You just revealed the hidden underground layer that you're keeping your super weapon.
Yeah.
Like,
you've already made your threats. Now's the time for action if they've transgressed again.
Is she going to put them all on cables that slowly descends them into a zombie pit? And she's going to explain her whole dastardly plan. And then just walk off and assume Dr. Evil style. It's all going to proceed according to plan. Like, is this an old Adam West Batman episode? What the shit?
I don't know, man.
I'm scared of this cliffhanger. This cliffhanger feels dumb.
Sure.
Unless it's literally Carol having a hallucination
But the way they shot it, where like they did a close up of Alpha with like, they're falling for it. I don't know. I'm a little scared that the first half of the season is going to be a little bit bumpy, because holy, I think this finale, mid-season finale, was pretty bumpy.
Yeah, I think if this were a hallucination, we would see everything from Carol's POV, but we definitely don't. We see some stuff from like the
but she's the only one that saw Alpha. They set it up to where she's literally the only one that saw Alpha.
She is, everyone, but we see Alpha after her, by herself running in the woods. Like you said, those sort of like, I got him now shots. Yeah, that's not from Carol's POV. That would be pretty dishonest filmmaking, but it's The Walking Dead, so...
And it was like, you know, it's like they're walking into this very obvious trap. It was cool to see Daryl like both knives out. Like, I'm like, oh, this might be cool.
Yeah.
But I guess I got to wait. I don't have to wait a week to see. But like, it seems hard to believe that they're going to be able to escape this trap.
And Alexandria is just, I mean, all the communities are fucked right now. Their biggest badasses are caught in a hole. Their other biggest badasses on a boat headed to an island. Who do they have left? They've got like,
is this the totality of the herd underneath these caves? Because the other thing is like, you couldn't really see how big this is. Is this a fraction of it? Because the obvious question is like, did Alpha lure them into this trap? All the badasses from Alexandria and Hilltop too. Because, you know, Jerry's here. And then she's going to ransack the places where they're gone.
If she wants to destroy them.
Who is left in Alexander and Hilltop that we know and care about? The blacksmith, Boston Rob.
That we know and care about?
Father Gabriel. Well, I was going to say Father Gabriel, Rosita, and her baby Coco.
Okay. Yeah. The only one who qualifies as a badass at this point, I think, is Rosita.
But you can't just stop. You just can't just kill the communities. There's no show left. So it's like, it can't just be these seven people fighting against
Whispers. You can have the heroic, triumphant return of Michonne with all the weapons, right? She flies in on a helicopter, starts launching rockets down on the herd outside of Hilltop or whatever.
Sure.
Because, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I just think Alexandria and the other communities are pretty vulnerable at the moment.
For sure. It's like I said, I predict a rocky episode or two, I might as well be expecting that, and I can be pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But, maybe they found it hard to come up with like a real good cliffhanger for the mid season. So that's why it feels disjointed. And, I also read an interview about, just non-spoiler interview with Angela Kang, where she said the season 11 is 100% plotted and planned all out in advance. They're not writing in a half season at a time. So I'm really hoping that this thing gets its narrative feedback underneath it and finishes strong. It sounds like it is. I've heard nothing but raves, relatively speaking, for the bonus episodes that they've come out with. I guess last night was the big Negan one I saw, judging by the title of the episode. So,
well, spoilers, I guess he's still alive.
That's true. Well, yeah, we've spoiled that a time or three in this season.
I guess it could be flashbacks.
But
who knows?
True. Could always be flashbacks. Like anything we're going to get out of Dante going forward. That's it for this episode of The Walking Dead. We are not taking a break. We're going right into the second half of the season, starting next week with episode 9 of season 10. In fact, we just got the season release. Like The Walking Dead's coming back much later than we thought. You know, our original plan was to hustle through season 10, consider all of the bonus episodes in one episode, and then just have time to get into the live episode in June. They're not coming back until August 22nd, I think is when it is. It's whatever the Sunday is. So we'll have plenty of time to catch up with all of season 10, have a nice, like, kind of 4-week break before we get in. I think what we'll probably do is take a 4-week break after season 10. And we'll do the bonus episodes in order right up until the air date of the new episode. And then we'll be covering that stuff live. And as we get closer, we'll talk about the format we're going to be doing and the different shows we're going to be doing on that. But I'm excited to get back to caught up and get on to the live Walking Dead stuff.
See Maggie Green come back, I think.
Maggie Green should be coming back and get some answers on this whole Georgie situation. The trash helicopters. The answers are out there. Perhaps. Perhaps. Sure. I believe, like Fox Mulder.
Yep.
Please send in the feedback to watchingdead@baldmove.com. And also don't forget that we record these live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/baldmove and stereo.com/baldmove. You can use the latter to give us real-time feedback. All right. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
Later.